From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tonight, the president stands before a Congress he and his party no longer control, and he'll call for policies Republicans say they do not want. Top of the list, one that taps into the never-ending debate on what actually lifts all boats, cash at the top for the wealthiest or cash for the middle class. President Obama will call for tax breaks for the middle and tax hikes at the top. This hour On Point, the president's new tax push and the pushback. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you say? Lay off the job creators or bring on the middle class tax relief? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in this hour the right-left economic debate, and later in the hour, we'll look at the politics, maybe the gamesmanship here. But joining me first from Washington is David Wessel, winner of two Pulitzer Prizes for his reporting, economics explainer extraordinaire, now director of the Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy, contributing correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. David Wessel, I'm delighted to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's good to be with you, Tom.
So here's the president saying, let's tax the wealthy, let's give something to the middle class. What exactly does he want to do, David?
I think what he wants to do is present a list of talking points to, that provides an alternative to what the Republicans are talking about. I think this is a real mishmash of things, some really interesting ideas that have been kicking around for a while, some recycling, but it's not really something meant to get through Congress.
Take us into the mishmash, though. Let's just, because it's going to be held up and people are going to be asked to look at it and think about it, about where the emphasis goes, where the money goes. I mean, here's a little bit of the president previewing his State of the Union speech tonight. This was a video posted at whitehouse.gov, making the case that his tax proposals are part of a long, larger fight.
Over the last 6 years, we have been weighed down by the legacy of the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression.
Now, he says, now we have to fight our way. We've fought our way through. Now we've got to do something for the great bulk of people in the country.
Now that we have fought our way through the crisis, how do we make sure that everybody in this country, how do we make sure that they're sharing in this growing economy? How do we make sure that they have the tools to succeed?
David, can you help us go through? You call it a mishmash, but just look at the tax part of this. It's not a tax. It's not a hike in the top rate on the wealthy. Essentially, the heart of it goes at what is going to be taxed at the time that estates are passed on to heirs, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, Ezra Klein of Vox.com called this the post-recession, post-deficit tax plan. And I think by that he means that the president is trying to use the tax code, as we always have, to do something about a social problem he's identified, which is inequality. And you're absolutely right. The most interesting and the new proposal here is to end something called the angel of death, which is that when you die, if you're sitting on a lot of capital gains because you bought some stock when you were young and then you die and you have a lot of capital gains, no one ever has to pay tax on those capital gains. They pass to your heirs without any taxation.
The angel comes like a tooth fairy and wipes all that away.
Just for, exactly.
Kind of a free pass for the next generation.
Exactly. Now, it's got a lot of bells and whistles. The first $200,000 of capital gains, which is a lot for a couple, isn't taxed. But basically, this is an attempt to go after the very wealthy people who find ways to pass things on to their kids. That's not something he's proposed before. The Republicans are likely to disagree with it, although at times there have been bipartisan calls for this. This was an element of the Simpson-Bowles deficit reduction plan. Mm-hmm. So that's one category. A second category of things where basically Republicans and Democrats agree and might actually become part of some tax bill if there ever is one. For instance, there's something called the Earned Income Tax Credit. That's a bonus that the government gives the working poor to encourage them to work.
Right.
And traditionally, it was only for people who had kids. And along, you know, a number of people, Paul Ryan, Marco Rubio, President Obama, have all said, you know, this doesn't really make any sense. We have a lot of single people who are working. Some of them actually have kids who they don't live with. Why don't we want to encourage them to work, particularly men? Mm-hmm. And so there's been a lot of talk about sweetening the earned income tax credit for these people. The president proposed it before. He's proposing it again.
And this would help. This would pay for that. The angel of getting rid of the angel of death, kind of tax break for the rich, would help pay for sweetening the earned income tax credit.
In part, I mean, he wants to get more money from upper-income people and give it to lower-income and middle-class people, and there's lots of moving pieces in it, so it's hard to say what pays for what, but basically you're right. And then I think there's another category of things which like sound good but really don't amount to much. Like he wants to give a $500 a year tax credit to 24 million couples where both people work. Now, there are a lot of problems with the tax code about what happens when both spouses work, and they've endless attempts to end the marriage penalty. But this really isn't going to make any difference. This is really just allows them to say something. It doesn't make any kind of radical reform of the tax code to deal with the fact that we have a lot of two-earner couples now.
And tripling the child care credit to $3,000 is in there as well?
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. I think that the president and some Republicans have recognized that if you want people to go to work, we want to give tax breaks for things that are expenses of work.
Mm-hmm.
And since so many couples with children, both people work, it's a way to give more of a tax break to encourage people to work. I think that once upon a time this was unpopular and the Republicans wanted to subsidize stay-at-home moms, but I think we've moved beyond that. He also, and this is a good thing in my opinion, a lot of these child care tax breaks, like education tax breaks, have gotten very complicated. Mm. Every year they add another flavor, and mm-hmm. he wants to streamline both of them. There'll be winners and losers in this, but it's hard to argue with provisions that would make the tax code simpler for working people who don't have expensive accountants.
When you look at these numbers and you say, well, $500 for a working couple, it's definitely something. It's nothing to sneeze at if you're putting just, let's say, $50,000 together all together, or, you know, it's going to make a difference. But in each individual budget, it's not going to be that big a deal. On the other end, how much does it take out of the pocket of the wealthy who are going to be chipping in here? Is it that big a deal at the top end?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, if you're the one who was going to benefit from the angel of death provision, or if you pay capital gains taxes because you have profits, you're going to have to pay a little more under the president's proposals. It will hurt. I'm not saying it won't make a difference. In round numbers, the president says he wants to raise $320 billion over 10 years from upper-income people. That's in a tax system that will take in something over $10 trillion in income tax receipts over that period. So it's going to matter to the people who pay it. But in terms of really big changes to the tax code, this is more a laundry list than significant changes, I think.
We often look at the people at the margins who might be particularly hurt. Like, let's say at the low end of the high end. Are people going to be bit there? People who don't have such enormous fortunes but might be touched by this?
There may be some instances of that. One of the disadvantages of the way the president has put this stuff out is you get these fact sheets, but you don't have the details. They won't come mm-hmm. until the president's budget comes out at the beginning of February. So the details really matter for that. They're sensitive to that. That's why they have all these exemptions on the estate tax, the step-up in basis provision or the angel mm-hmm. of death provision, to prevent it from biting too hard at people who are in the upper middle class. But many people who have a lot of money don't think of themselves as rich, and some of them will be affected by this.
How do you look at the president? We heard him describing this as part of giving the middle class tools to succeed. Others describe it as redistribution. How do you see it, David?
Well, it definitely is redistribution. I mean, by definition, if you raise taxes on upper-income people and give it to middle-income people, that's by definition redistribution. I think some of the things, though, are attempts to give to reward work. That's the expansion of the earned income tax credit. And we didn't talk about the higher education stuff, and I don't quite understand how all the pieces fit together. But
free community college in here as well.
There's the spending for the community college program, which will make it easier for people who aren't the poorest people to go to community college free. There's a restructuring of all the tax breaks for community college, for college education in general, some of which go more to upper-income people than to middle-income people. So I think this is part of a presidential agenda that, to me, makes sense, where you say, look, we know that we have to find a way to make our education system more of an escalator for upward mobility. It's not only about money, but it's partly about money. And can we redesign our system so it's easier for people to use and targeted at people for whom a little more help in going to college makes a big difference?
We're going to get different perspectives on this in just a moment here. But some are calling it a Robin Hood tax, and many of those using that are critics. Maybe not everybody. If you I don't know if you can extract politics from this, David, but given what's happened with wages in this country and concentration of wealth at the top, is a Robin Hood tax necessarily a bad thing? Is there a non-political way to look at that? Is there a purely economic way to look at that?
Well, there's no non-political way to look at it if you want to use slogans like the Robin Hood tax, or the Angel of Death thing I used before. I mean, these labels actually influence the debate and create a narrative. But I think the evidence is that we've had a widening of inequality in the United States and in many other developed countries over the past decade or two. And in the United States, the tax system leans against this inequality, but it hasn't increased the pressure on the inequality, and the president is trying to change that. Some economists think this is a bad idea. It hurts growth. It's interesting that the International Monetary Fund, which is hardly a bunch of socialists, is arguing now that there are ways to use a tax system or government grants to reduce inequality that actually help growth. I don't think that redistribution alone will solve the problem, but it's clear that the president is presenting a platform here, a respectable position, that when you have lots of inequality, it's incumbent on the government to do something to make the prosperity more widely shared. After all, we've had a growing economy now since the middle of 2009, but wages have not risen and incomes for the middle class have not risen. And it seems like that should be susceptible to government policy, or at least that's what the president is arguing.
Are we still in the trickle-down debate? Does it work or not, David Wessel?
Yes. I think it changes over time. So it's really interesting that Republicans like Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio talk a lot about what can we do to create more upward mobility. But the president is trying to use this tax plan to target Republicans who think the trickle-down still works. And we'll see how they join the fight.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama's new tax push, hikes for the rich, cuts for the middle class, looking at what's behind the push, what it would mean, who's pushing back, and why. David Wessel is with us. Heather Boucher and Jason Fichtner join us in just a second. A lot of people have been out talking about this. Here was Obama's senior advisor, Dan Pfeiffer, on NBC's Meet the Press, saying the president's economic policies and tonight's State of the Union address boil down to three words.
Tuesday night speech, let me give you the theme of the speech in three words. Middle-class economics. He's going to talk about how middle-class economics brought us back from the brink and put us to a place where the economy is growing, jobs are growing, the deficit is shrinking. And he's going to lay out his plan to deal, as I said, with wage stagnation and declining economic mobility in ways that we can really help the middle class.
And the pushback right away from Republican Jason Chaffetz, Utah. Here it is.
It's a non-starter. Mm-hmm. We're not just one good tax increase away from prosperity in this nation. This nation had its all-time highest, the record number of receipts coming into the Treasury. Are you going to actually grow the economy and jobs? Are entrepreneurs going to be better off? Are small businessmen going to be better off with more taxes and more government? No.
Answer, no, says the Republican. Minnesota Democrat Al Franken on his local TV CBS affiliate WCCO on Sunday saying, yes, let's push more to the middle class.
This is about the middle class. This is about the fact that we've seen this economy growing and most of the benefits have been going to those at the very top. And the economy, our economy, always does better when the middle class does better, when the middle class has money to spend.
There's the debate. Is the push for real? Is it a negotiating ploy for bigger tax reform? Well, no doubt part of it. Is it just a non-starter? We shall see. David Wessel is with us from the Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy at the Brookings Institution. David, stand by. With us right now from Washington, Heather Boucher, Executive Director, Chief Economist, the Washington Center for Economic Growth, former Senior Economist with the Joint Economic Committee in Congress. Heather, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
And from the George Mason University Mercatus Center, Jason Fichtner is here, Senior Research Fellow there. Jason Fichtner, welcome back. Great to have you as well.
Thanks, Tom.
Heather, you may be a little more sympathetic to the president's view. Can you, as an economist, make a credible argument for this tax package?
I think you certainly, as an economist, can make a very credible argument that this kind of package, combined with many of the other policies that the president is going to talk about this evening, are actually very good for the economy. think what's really interesting here is that the administration is identifying the most important economic problem, which is the middle class squeeze, and has put together a set of solutions that would target high inequality, would try to refocus the economy on growing the middle class so that we can all benefit. And that is all very consistent with the evidence. You know, David Wessel a few moments ago talked about some research coming out of the International Monetary Fund on these questions. And I want to say that the research that they found is it's really important, and I want the listeners to hear about this, that they've looked at inequality across all sorts of countries and found that places that have higher inequality are have shorter spells of economic growth. It is associated with poorer economic outcomes. And they have, in fact, found that efforts to reduce inequality, that is redistribution, actually does not harm economic growth. It's very compelling research, and that's only the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot of evidence out there that the kinds of arguments that we've been hearing for decades from the supply side crowd just really don't have any grounding in actual economics.
Jason Fichtner, how about that argument that at a certain point, go far enough and inequality itself becomes an impediment to growth and a healthy economy? That's where we are. We need to do something. Here, the president says, here's a way.
Well, I'm concerned, Tom, that we're missing the opportunity to have a bigger picture discussion and that the president's proposals are more grandstanding or window dressing. And Heather is sort of right about the idea of income inequality. We don't know at what point it starts hurting economic growth, but we know it when we see it both from an economic perspective and also from a social perspective. The problem we get into is more structural. What the president's proposing a lot of this is little things here. $500 tax credit, which David Wessel said isn't going to really do anything. We're missing the opportunity to have a discussion about how to reform our tax code so that we turn some of the incentives around to actually help the middle class. For example, reforming the home mortgage interest deduction so it's a credit as opposed to a deduction. The president has a proposal, which I'm in favor of, which is to do a auto IRA for workers so they're automatically enrolled in an IRA and have to opt out. But we could turn that into a credit as opposed to a deduction. Those are things we should be talking about to help middle class grow, not just these window dressing credits here and there.
Would those have the equivalent impact of redistributing? Not that that's the be-all and end-all, but would those, you know, funnel more of our society's resources to the middle class, give them the tools, Jason?
Well, yes, they would. And Tom, you made a great point with saying the word tools. So tools allow you to
Well, I'm just quoting the president there, but you may not agree about
well,
what tools
well, but, are. But tools are important. They allow you to create. The problem that we're seeing with some of these tax policies is they're designed for political impact to say, we're going to give you something. This is the president's free speech lunch. Everything's free, a chicken in every pot. He's trying to give things away. Everything's free, free, free. But nothing's free. It's got to come from somewhere else. What we need to do is start looking at things that can build the tools and build society and work us towards growing. There are some things that we can talk about when it comes to education and community colleges, but we need to talk about restructuring our whole tax system so we change the incentive structures so that they're not upside down and benefiting the wealthy, but they actually do benefit the middle income and lower income.
Heather, there's Jason essentially saying, yes, too much inequality is not a good thing and we need to do something about it, but this isn't the thing. This is kind of a eye-catching, chicken in every pot, free lunch, window dressing. There are better ways to do it than the president's tax proposal, Heather.
Well, I have to disagree with him there. I mean, there are some real concrete proposals in this plan. I want to just stress that in order to really address this middle class squeeze, we're going to need a variety pack of policies. We're going to need all sorts of things, from tax policy to labor market policy to education and everything in between. So it does seem like the president is picking a few things in each of those buckets to focus on in the speech tonight. But it does get at some of the key issues. I think this addressing the loophole for people who receive trust funds and inheritances is really important. That's an important new change. Raising the capital gains and dividend rates. Piece of the tax package. And the evidence shows, again, I would point us to the solid economic research that shows that the decreases that we've seen in capital gains taxes have not been associated with economic growth. And there's a lot of room there to raise those taxes, and that will not have a negative impact on our economy. So it's good to hear, Jason, that there is a lot of places where we agree, but I do think that many of these are the right step forward. Let me add one more thing, which is that On the other side of the ledger, the president is putting together a set of policies that will address some of the very real challenges that families are facing. Addressing the 200 credit is really important. Extending the EITC to people without children is important. But also the push for Congress to pass the Healthy Families Act that would give workers the right to earn paid sick days, mm-hmm. and extending paid family medical leave. So putting those together in this larger package, addressing inequality and addressing the middle class squeeze front and center where it's really affecting families. I think that's these are their first steps, but they're very important steps.
David Wessel, jump in here. We've got prominent Republicans lately talking about inequality and the middle class going nowhere as a problem. Mitt Romney, Jeb Bush. On the other hand, if you look at a chart of when wages really began to stagnate here, it sort of lines up with this period of neoliberal economics going back to Ronald Reagan. Some Americans have become skeptical about Republican claims that they're really working for those making less. Do you see a real policy determination on the Republican side to fix this, David, or is there just a defense of them that's got here?
No, I think that a number of Republicans have realized that it's hard to get reelected if you cast yourself as the party of the haves and small business people. And they are responding to this angst that the American middle class has that maybe my kids aren't going to live as well as I've lived. Maybe we can't get ahead even if we play by the rules. So I think it's a very healthy thing that the debate has gone from denial. You don't hear Republicans saying, oh, inequality is just some statistical artifact, to having a discussion about what to do about it. Now, the what to do about it is tough. I agree with Jason. We don't really know what will work. And so a lot of this is going to be some experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some people who run for office really are venal and they only care about their campaign contributors. But I think it's too simple to say that the Republicans are for the rich and the Democrats are for the working class. And I don't think that's a healthy way to divide the thing up. I think you have to really look at what they're going to propose. And we'll see. Paul Ryan is now chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Let's see what meat he puts on the bones of his promises. If it turns out to be only tax breaks for the rich and a whole lot of shrinking of government programs to shrink the size of government, that's one thing. If it's actually some creative ways to increase social mobility in the U.S., well, then he deserves credit.
Yep, you don't want to oversimplify. On the other hand, the long-term trend line is pretty simple and pretty disturbing, and people want something done. Susie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
David, Heather, Jason, let me go to our caller, Susie in Seguin, Texas. Susie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What do you think?
I wanted to say one thing was we're always talking, you know, about this being Robin Hood tax. What has it been the entire time since George Bush and even back to Reagan, but especially George Bush became president, George Bush Jr., and raised the taxes on the middle class and cut them greatly on the wealthy. What do we call that? Okay, that's stealing from the poor, basically, okay? Then the other thing that I wanted to comment on is two things. How can our inequality be affected if indeed 50% of school children now in the public school are on some sort of, not welfare, but some sort of a program to feed them from the government?
Yeah.
We have, and when we have a situation where the middle class, we're not talking about college. I mean, I'm in the middle class, and my son is 19, and kids are nowadays talking about, well, I don't need a degree for that because they can't pay for a degree. And when you're talking about $60,000 to get a bachelor's degree from a community or, like a mm-hmm. University of Texas, there's something very wrong, or $36,000 if I'm lucky. So the volumes of money that we would have to generate for the middle class to get us back to, quote unquote, any kind of equality is difficult to imagine how we'd get there. But nobody is talking about when we're talking, say Romney, when he was running for president, mm-hmm. he had how many hundreds of millions of dollars offshore. how many other people have hundreds of millions of dollars? We're not talking about people who make $1 million a year or $2 million a year. That's upper middle class, quite honestly.
Susie, we've got it. You're paying close attention. We've got it from Sagin, and I appreciate your call. Jason Fichtner, what about that? We probably all saw the headlines recently. Something like half or more of American school children now get subsidized lunches because their family incomes are falling so low that they're in that category. Does it make sense in a time like that to go after something like the Angel of Death tax that is sparing largely rather wealthy Americans from capital gains taxes when they pass on fortunes to their kids?
Well, I think this goes into a larger discussion of how you do education reform, because the public school systems are good for some people and poor for others, and throwing money at it doesn't necessarily just work. We have to really consider how we do education in this country.
Wait a minute. I don't think that's it at all. We're talking about kids eating lunch versus other kids who are going to have untaxed huge capital gains handed to them without the government maybe using that to make sure we're better off.
Well, but the study was those kids who are in public schools, and sort of making the suggestion that people were being wealthier kids being pulled out for private schools or charter schools.
I think the suggestion is their families just don't make a good enough living to pack a decent lunch for them. And I'm asking you, in that circumstance, is there something wrong with nipping in to some of those capital gains that would otherwise just go to very well-off heirs?
Well, I do think we're trying to get – this gets into that class warfare rhetoric, which we're trying to avoid and trying to separate the two. We do want to do some policies to make sure that students and kids have lunches and have adequate substance and can go to school and not be hungry. That's agriculture and food policy, education policy. That's different from the tax policy side. We shouldn't sort of link the two and say you're taking from the rich to give to the poor.
But you're saying let's step back and get the big picture. Part of that is the big picture. Heather Boucher, I mean, you could look at the Angel of Death exemption here on taxing those capital gains and say that's a kind of special favor for the wealthy.
You cannot separate the rise in income inequality from the changes in economic growth and what's happened to the middle class. I mean, full stop. These things are intricately related. So I think Susie's question was on point.
We'll take it.
There is a lot of evidence that what we have been doing in our economy is letting some people get away with taking an increasing share of the benefits of what our economy produces. Let me remind us all that America each year notwithstanding the dark day of the Great Recession, but America continues to be a richer country. Economic growth has returned. The stock market has returned. But American families are not seeing the benefit of that growth. And that is why we have so many school children who go to school hungry and who need help at school getting lunches. That's a tragedy in one of the richest countries in the world that we cannot solve that problem. But we have to understand that that is intricately connected to the rise in inequality. We've seen a decrease in tax rates on incomes at the very top. Economists are now producing serious research papers that show that that is then connected to the kinds of wages that we pay them. So it's not even that the tax system doesn't limit all of the inequality that we see in the labor market. But because we have reduced taxes on those very top earners, that actually creates incentives for them to get even higher pay packages, which is then associated with the fact that middle-class earners don't see real wage increases.
Heather, hold it there. David Wessel, I know we have to lose you in just a second here. At the top, you called the president's big package a mishmash. If there's an issue here, is there a consensus on a better way to approach this, David? Do you have a suggestion?
Well, I think it's wrong to think that we're going to cure the inequality that we think has widened by just using the tax code. And I think some of what Jason's saying is that if we're going to do social programs, mm-hmm. we're going to have to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if the middle class is struggling, the money's going to have to come from people at the top, or we're going to just make the deficit worse in the long run. So I think the frustration I have is that this discussion doesn't talk enough about how do we get the economy growing faster. And it doesn't focus on a kind of wholesale reform of the tax code, just a lot of little things.
We'll come back and look at that. David Wessel at the Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy at the Brookings Institution. David, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about President Obama's new tax push. Hikes for the wealthy, cuts for the middle class. He says it's high time for this. Well, what about it? Heather Boucher is here. She's executive director, chief economist at the Washington Center for Economic Growth. She's all for it. Jason Fichtner's here, senior research fellow at the George Mason University's Mercatus Center. He says, wrong way to go. There's been a lot of talk about this on the Republican side. Here was on Face the Nation on Sunday. This is Marco Rubio, Republican senator out of Florida, saying no thank you to this caller for a higher capital gains tax.
This is a 20th century outdated model the president is following. The notion, first of all, that in order for some people to do better, someone has to do worse, is just not true. Raising taxes on people that are successful is not going to make people that are struggling more successful.
Don't raise those taxes on the successful. But Republicans are talking about inequality in a more prominent way than we've seen in a while. Here was Governor Mitt Romney, former Massachusetts governor, at the winter meeting of the Republican National Committee in San Diego just last week, laying responsibility for that inequality on the Democrats.
Under President Obama, the rich have gotten richer, income inequality has gotten worse, and there are more people in poverty in America than ever before. Under this president, his policies have not worked. Their liberal policies are good every 4 years for a campaign, but they don't get the job done. The only policies that will reach into the hearts of American people and pull people out of poverty and break the cycle of poverty are Republican principles, conservative principles. They include family formation and education and good jobs, and we're going to bring them to the American people.
Mitt Romney's way of talking about inequality. Heather, Jason, lots of response from our listeners here. John says the Congress needs to focus on what is right for the country and not be distracted by Obama's Dear Santa list, the no free lunch critique of the Obama program. But Ron says the Republicans push bills to take billions away from aid programs that help lower income, retired, and vets, but set their hair on fire if you ask for a few pennies from the coffers of the oligarchy. Okay, Nick in Oklahoma City. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. As a self-employed middle-class individual, I'm definitely in favor of this plan.
Why?
Being self-employed, I ended up paying about 25% to 30% of my income to the IRS last year, and I really think a lot of people are really unaware of the tax inequality in this country. You know, when you work a regular job, you kind of are unaware of how much you're actually paying in taxes when you're not having to pay it directly to the IRS. And,
Is the president's plan going to actually help you, Nick? I mean, he's not going to cut your marginal tax rate here. There might be, depending what you're making with your business, there might be a little something in it for you, but are you sure it will help you?
You know, I'm not 100% sure it would help me directly, but, overall, you know, I just feel that the middle class could really use a break, because I think that people saying how great the economy is doing, you know, to the middle class, it really doesn't seem that way.
Nick, I appreciate your call from Oklahoma City. Heather, there's self-employed Nick in Oklahoma looking for a tax break. Is he going to get it with this president, with this plan?
Well, as you said, Tom, I mean, that all depends on exactly what his income is. But, you know, I do think that he's hit the nail on the head with the point, which is that, you know, the problem here is this squeeze on the middle class. And here is a variety pack of policies that will do something to address that. I mean, whether or not that will actually pass this Congress is of course, another question. But there are elements of this plan that will help middle class families. The two-earner tax credit, the benefit for two-earners will certainly help middle-class families. The child care tax incentives will, of course, also help middle-class families. And then the extent to which we are refocusing the tax system to ensure that everyone pays their fair share will, in fact, also help middle-class families. So this is really a set of policies that will benefit folks like Nick in Oklahoma.
But David Wessel says, maybe along the lines of Jason, I don't know about the specific policy, but overall he's saying, we need more emphasis on making the whole economy grow faster. That's the way to help out people from Nick and everybody else.
Well, Tom, this is a very important point, is because a lot of the rhetoric we're hearing, Heather has now said it, the president said it, is all being couched in fairness. I don't want to make this a pejorative statement, just descriptive, but the top 1% pay 38% of all federal income taxes. The top 5% is paying 59%. The top 10% of tax filers are paying 70% federal income taxes.
Yeah, but we've also seen what the top of that pyramid has in terms of the income and wealth of this country. I mean, they're not so out of whack.
But this gets to the point about what does it mean to be fairness? I mean, so the question is, they're already paying their fair share. And if you start looking at the tax code for the middle income people, so if we agree is $75,000, $100,000 middle income, for those who are in the $100,000 bracket, already 10% of them aren't paying federal income taxes. When you start doing these additional child tax credits, you're taking more and more off the tax rolls and requiring a smaller and smaller group to pay for government.
But isn't that inevitable when we allow inequality to get into this really distended state, Jason? I mean,
so what we should do is to help people like Nick and the rest of the country, and this goes to David Russell's point, is instead of trying to narrow the tax base by chipping away and giving little things here and there, let's broaden the base, get rid of these deductions and credits, simplify it, and lower the rates for everybody. That's or not doing what economists think is the most efficient way to do it, is to lower the rates and broaden the base to help everybody.
Mary in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Mary, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have to agree with Mitt Romney and everybody else that the wealthy have gotten – the rich have gotten richer, the poor have gotten poorer under Barack Obama – or under this administration, which is why I don't understand why wealthy people don't love Barack Obama. If it's all about the economy, they have done extremely well. The stock market has doubled in value. Companies are making record profits. They're sitting on record amounts of cash. I think the decision to have the economy recover be driven by the private sector has not worked. And again, I don't think that was a Barack Obama decision, but for whatever reason, our Congress, our government decided that through tax cuts for businesses and for wealthy people, that our recovery was going to be driven by the private sector, which meant that corporations were supposed to use those tax cuts and those savings to invest in business, to hire people, to pay them a living wage. But that hasn't happened. Instead, in my opinion, the corporations, the wealthy people, have pocketed the money. They've moved jobs elsewhere where it can get done cheaper. They continue to pay minimum wage. They don't pay benefits. So they have gotten wealthy off of these policies, whereas the poor people have not benefited at all.
Mary, let me pick it up right there. Our time grows short, but I think we've got it. Jason, what about the critique? The emphasis on cutting for the top for job creators, our caller says, has not worked. Look around.
Well, I think this is the problem with some of the data, too. If you look at the Brookings Institution, and David Wessel's left us, but we have data that Gary Burtless has done that shows that actually the bottom fifth, the second fifth, they haven't gotten worse off. They're actually better off. The problem is we're looking at just wages, not total compensation. And we're also not including the EITC, the child tax credit. Look at after-tax income from 2010. The bottom fifth is 20% better off.
So Americans just don't understand their circumstances.
What they think is happening,
they're just wrong. They just misperceive.
Well, no, I don't want to say that. That's belittling. What happens is because the
sounds
cost
like that's
of
what
health.
You're saying, though.
Well, no, because employers have to look at all costs. They have to look at the cost of health care, retirement costs. What the employee sees, the individual sees their paycheck. What they don't see is the employer having to pay, again, Nick going back to self-employment, they got to pay payroll taxes, they have to pay health insurance. All those costs have gone up. So if you include total compensation has been rising.
So people are better off than they think. I mean, I'm just not sure that's really going to fly.
That's a political question.
Well, yes and no. You can interpret in lots of ways. I guess my question is, are you saying then that everything's just hunky-dory here, and we just need to do the trickle-down again.
No, what I'm saying is we need to have a full discussion about what the data shows, because we're increasing costs to employers, and you know Heather wants to push this agenda of giving more paid sick leave off for employees. What that does is make employment more expensive to employers. That gives us less workers, not more. We got to look at not just wages, but what it costs to hire an employee. If we don't reduce the total cost to employers, we can't shift any of that money to workers and wages.
Heather Boucher, is our caller, Mary, misreading the big picture here? She just hasn't studied the fine print in the Brookings data?
Well, no, I do not think that Mary is missing the big picture. I think that a couple of things. I mean, first, this, you know, Jason said a few minutes ago that this argument was about fairness. And I think he is, quite frankly, not not correct in that. This isn't just about fairness. It's about economic growth, and it's about what's good for firms as well as what is good for families. We have to think about the economy like economists, not just like rich business leaders who only want to focus on, you know, one side of the economy. When we sort of step back and look at the whole economy, what we see is that the things that we are doing that are allowing inequality to rise are actually bad for the overall economy. The OECD has estimated that reducing inequality would actually lead to GDP growing by about 0.8 percentage points over 5 years. That is just one of a series of pieces of evidence that we have out there that show that this is fairness. It's certainly about fairness, but it's also about economic growth. And so I think that Mary was on point there. It's also about what is not just good for families, but what is good for businesses. I think that there is a lot of evidence that shows that policies like paid leave actually improve labor supply. They improve job matching. They're good for business. They're good for workers. Yes, certainly they may cost a business a short-term expense in, you know, on a given day. But when you look over the medium and long-term and you look at the overall economic impacts, you find that these are quite important. Did you know that the United States now has lower labor supply than many other developed economies because we are not doing what we need to do to make the economy work for families?
Heather, we've got to cut it right there. Yes. I'm sorry to have to do that, but we've got to look at the politics of this. We're grateful to you for being with us. Heather Boucher at the Washington Center for Economic Growth. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jason Fichtner at George Mason University's Mercatus Center. Jason, thanks for carrying that torch today.
Thanks, Tom, for having me on the show.
Let's look at the politics of all this, what the president's proposing, why, and the kind of reception it's likely to get. With us right now from Washington, Ron Fournier. He is national columnist and editorial director at the National Journal. Ron, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm okay, trying to figure out what's going on with our economy and the politics swirling through it. When the president lays this out tonight, and it's pretty well laid out already, though there are more details to come, what's he pushing for? Is there any, you know, is a thing more than a snowball's chance and you know where that this would ever become law? And if not, what's he doing?
Well, what he's doing, I'm afraid, and what the Republican Party are doing, I'm afraid, is basically framing the next election. That this is part of this perpetual cycle of campaigns that we're in, and both sides are getting themselves ready for 2016.
Isn't that called cycle of campaigns?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the cynical look at it. I mean, we have the potential for something real to happen here. If you look at it, the Republicans just came off of a historic victory, obviously, in November. They won back the Senate. They have more seats in the House than they've had in decades. And the president, for him, he's seeing tremendous gains in the polls, remarkable gains in the polls just in the last month. For example, there's a new poll out today that shows 45% of the public is now satisfied with the economy, which is the highest in 11 years, which is pretty remarkable. So you could argue that both of them have their wind at their back, and this would be the opportunity where they could agree that there is income disparity in this country. There are a lot of people being left behind. While the economy is chugging along in a lot of ways, you know, millions of Americans aren't seeing the benefits. And meanwhile, there's this political dynamic going on where both parties are being pressured by populist forces in their bases. There's a lot of room for agreement and to move forward, but I just don't see it happening.
The GOP is expressing some dismay here and saying, wait a minute, we thought we might be open and ready for a conversation about tax reform here. And here the president comes, you know, unannounced with no advance warning and sort of smacks us with this proposal he knows we won't like. How do you read that? Is this an opening bid, a tough one maybe, in tax reform negotiations? Or is it it's not going to work, so we're just going to put this out there and then make you Republicans, you know, look ungenerous by not going
exactly
with it?
You know, they're the party of no. I mean, it hasn't escaped the White House that while their numbers have gone up, the Republicans' numbers have stayed the same. They got no honeymoon out of their victory. You're asking the right question. If I had more faith in the system right now, if I had more faith in either one of these parties, I would call this an opening bid. That the president, you know, in negotiating, you put out more than you you ask for more than you could possibly get, and quietly you work towards the middle. The problem is neither the Republican Party or the Democratic Party in the last 10 years has shown much willingness to work towards the middle, to look towards compromise. They're both captive of their bases, and they're both, you know, just cynically focused on the next election. So I'm afraid we're not going to get much out of this, that this is not an opening bid. It's the first speech of the 2016 presidential campaign.
Well, I think Americans are sick of that kind of situation. Let's stay
way
back then. I mean, I'm looking at your latest piece. You got a picture of Obama and Romney here, and the headline is one empty suit, I guess you mean Romney, and one mm-hmm. empty agenda, I guess you mean President Obama. If Americans just say, look, we don't want just posturing and power grab. We want real we want a government that's really at grips with our problems. What's your recommendation, Ron?
You know, the only silver lining I see is this rising generation of millennials who are a lot more pragmatic, a lot more tolerant, a lot more consensus building than their parents and grandparents. They see these old institutions throughout society, but especially in politics and government, as silos that are no longer serving society, and they want to blow them up. And they have the means through technology and a level of civic engagement that we haven't seen since the greatest generation.
They got to vote for somebody, though. Where does that go?
Well, right now they're not. 2008 was kind of an outlier. They voted in great numbers, and they voted in great numbers for the Democratic Party. Since then, they've been running away from politics because they don't see it as a way of actually getting things done. They're out there doing a lot of really interesting social entrepreneurship. What they're going to have to do is realize that they're right, that this system is not working, and why in a world where you have all kinds of choices in the music you buy and how you shop for clothes and other goods, why is it that we have to settle for these two parties, neither of which are getting the job done?
Wow, there's a sobering note to end a tax conversation on empty suits versus empty agenda. Ron Fournier at National Journal, thanks very much for joining us, Ron.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, where do we go? Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.